You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of April 10th, 2024. And we us all.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Alboy.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And today, it's a somber conversation about video games.
Pour one out.
Not for the... Well, let's be real. We're talking about the Wii U today. The Wii U apparently has not been in manufacturing production since 2017. But they finally... They turned off the lights. They shut down the party.
They're going home.
They turned off the online functionality and eShop of the Wii U.
It's always such a funny moment in video games, or specific games where the servers die. You know, it's such like a
I guess
this is it, right? The run is over.
That's it. I mean, it's just pack it up, boys. Like, download your Miiverse picks and. Just pack it in because that beautiful dream is gone.
Yeah. Well, I guess people are modded though, right? Like they're still messing around with it. There's always some like crazy tech junkies that are doing crazy stuff with old consoles.
That is a good point. I should start looking into that. I mean, this caught my eye because, it's funny to have, it's funny in this day and age where the consoles are long gone, but because we have this online infrastructure across all consoles now, even Nintendo consoles, they kind of have this weirdly long tail after no development is being done on them. And then I just started thinking a lot about the Wii U, and we're like, what, a year out from a new Nintendo console, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's like, maybe it's time to do a check-in, like a reevaluation of what do we think about the Wii U on this kind of ending date of the services, and like dig into it a little bit.
Yeah, it's wild because I think this is going to be remembered in the same way that the Dreamcast kind of was. Maybe not as fondly, I guess. Yeah. The Dreamcast sold more units, I'm sure. But there was something like... different and edgy about it that we just we don't fully have, right? And I mean, we can go into details in a bit. Yeah. I did want to, since you mentioned it before the podcast, let's talk about sales numbers, because I have the lifetime sales numbers. PlayStation 2, $158.7 million, or million units, excuse me.
Man, that's so crazy. That's just so many video game consoles.
I mean, I think it's pretty well recognized as what, like, the best console of all time, right? Like, the run of games on the PlayStation 2 is wild.
Well, and also it came at the exact right time for people who wanted DVD players.
Yes, also true. That's true.
So it's like, it's just this like legendary console.
Yeah, and it was around for a very long time. Like,
right,
you know, its run was, you know, 10 plus years of content being put out on that system. So Nintendo DS is second with 154 million. That's handheld, so I don't know. Maybe you would count that, maybe you wouldn't.
I wonder if they lump in all the DS variants.
DS Lite,
you know,
I think they do. Yeah. Okay. They, well, no. DSi. 3DS is listed separately, but correct. I bet you DS Lite or DSi or whatever are probably lumped in. A Nintendo Switch. Okay. I mean, this is the wild thing. To go from the Wii U to the Nintendo Switch. Nintendo Switch is currently sitting at 137.7 million units sold.
Man,
wild, because it's not even, it's not running off of like the DVD angle, right? Like it is just, that's all Switch gas, baby.
It's even... also it exists, unlike the PlayStation 2 and the DS, the Switch is a truly post smartphone console, and it still sold that much.
Yes, it's nuts. And last year, and it's not going down, right? Last year, PlayStation 5 sold the most units. They sold 1.2 million units last year. Switch was just behind it at 1.1 million, well ahead of Xbox, which was at 456,000.
After being, like, the Switch is, like, limping around in the market for, like, what, 8 years or something like that. Like it's still selling that as much as a PS5. That's just crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the Switch will overtake PlayStation 2, but I mean, in the long run, I mean, maybe there's a chance, you know?
Maybe. It lives in a different world, which is why it's just all the more like when the PlayStation 2 was coming out, people weren't giving their kids iPads to play Roblox on, where now they are. And even so, if it's like still in the same ballpark, that's even wilder that it's still able to exist in such a more diverse video game machine world.
Okay, so going back to context, Nintendo Switch, 137 million. The Nintendo Wii, which predated the Wii U, 101.6 million. So almost 102 million.
Massive.
Right. Massive. The Wii U, 13.5 million.
Man.
Staggeringly low. And this is behind the PlayStation Vita, a notoriously poorly selling unit.
You know, I believe I had a Vita. Maybe I still have it somewhere in a drawer or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, somewhere up in heaven, the Wii U and the Vita
are just living
out their lives. Yeah. Oh man. Okay, so 13. So that's like what, 10% of what the Switch sold.
10%. 10% of what the Switch has sold. But it's. I mean, even comparing it to other units, right? Like PlayStation Vita sold almost 16 million. So close to 3 million more than Nintendo Wii U, right? Like, and we're looking at, you know, GameCube beats it, Sega system, Xbox, Atari 2600 beats it, Sega Genesis beats it.
Right.
Like, come on. It's wild how poorly it performed, you know?
That was what I was thinking, though, because, like, in my mind, I have a lot of fond memories associated with the Wii U, and I feel like I'm still experiencing its influence in a lot of other games that are happening.
Yeah, it's a strange thing because you can see that there are clear through lines with the Nintendo Switch, right? The Polygon article that you had mentioned includes an interview with, I forget, someone at Nintendo. Maybe it was Reggie or maybe it was...
Yeah, Reggie was talking about it.
Yeah, like this idea that consumers were confused and thought that the tablet was kind of the console rather than just the controller. And when they learned that, oh, it's just a controller, they felt like it wasn't a sufficient upgrade to justify it. But they were attracted by the proposition of a tablet that could seamlessly play the game on the TV and then on the tablet, so on and so forth. So there's this very direct through line to the Switch, right? Like there's no question about it. The Switch would not exist today were it not for this innovation of the Wii U. Yeah. But there's also like all these other features that are just kind of dead in the water that were never really used much, right? Like the second screen functionality. I remember talking about this with you back in the day and writing about it in the early days of Experience Points. But the idea that you could have asymmetric gameplay because each player would have their own tablet, but then a shared screen was such, was and continues to be, to me, a very fascinating proposition. We've gotten more asymmetric gameplay because of the rise of just online multiplayer, and there's games where, you know, people are doing different things and that's the information. But the sort of couch co-op idea of it, I really loved, and it felt like such a great opportunity. And even though we have this through line in the Switch, we don't see that functionality being used at all. Like, I don't see, I mean, I guess it's not really possible because either you're docked or you're undocked.
Yes.
But it's just like, it's not like, I think we threw out some of the baby with the bathwater with the Wii U. Mm-hmm. Or in some of the ways that the accelerometer inside of the tablet allowed you to use it almost like a AR view.
Yes.
Like you could lift it up in certain games and like snap pictures with it as you're like looking around your environment. And again, yes, you can do that in extremely expensive VR, but the Switch doesn't really do that. I mean, I guess it could. It has sensors in the controllers, but it's not, we've kind of abandoned that as an input mechanism or as a way to play this game. So it's interesting because we do have this through line, but also we've just abandoned a lot of the ideas that the Wii U took to the table, I think for better and worse, right? Like I think anytime we miss an opportunity to explore thoroughly the design opportunities that provides, the worse it is for everybody.
Well, I think you're like honing in on the biggest, you know, the biggest differentiator of the Wii U was the tablet controller, and the to this day, I think the tablet controller changed the way that it altered the way that I play games. Like I think that if the Wii U didn't come out, I might not. If the Wii U doesn't come out, then I don't get into the habit of being able to play a fully fleshed out console game while someone else is using the television.
Yeah, like on the couch. Yeah,
exactly. Or just like, you know, whatever, like you're, you know, someone else is playing a different game and using the TV or watching a movie or whatever, or you're just kind of like the true second screen experience was like, that was the first time that that was enabled. And it wasn't about the capabilities of, like, to your point, the accelerometer, the touch screen, any of that stuff. But I don't think I have a Steam Deck today if the Wii U didn't exist, which is a weird thing to think about. Like, that lineage is like a weird thing to think about, because the lesson they took was, hey, people really like this form factor and the flexibility of having their game portable, but like a full console game. And so we'll just turn that into the full point with the Switch. But, and then I don't think there's any world in which, you know, we get all of these like portable handheld PC options if the Switch isn't as popular as it is. So like, we have this like weird lineage that is useful from like a form factor perspective. But to your point, they had to abandon the gameplay aspect of it.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea that like that you have a Steam Deck because of the Wii U is kind of hilarious, but there's also something like philosophical about it, because I think at the time it really felt like we had ceded mobile gaming to the land of cell phones and shitty mobile games, right? Like we just wouldn't take it seriously. Yes, I guess we had like the DS and stuff, but it was like a handheld thing, right? It wasn't the same thing.
It was specific,
like, like the scale of it, I think, was different when you have it realized in the form factor of like a tablet that's actually in your hands, you know, and with the full controllers right there, right? Like we've seen attachments to your phone that sort of try to replicate like the full Wii U experience functionally, right? Like that they were doing well in advance. So,
And we still haven't cracked that. I feel like even though all, you know, you could connect an Xbox or a PlayStation controller to a phone now, no problem. But like, I just get the sense that not a huge amount of people are doing that. And so it still is a unique thing that to have a fully realized console controller, but in a mobile context. And I think that's what the Wii U started.
The other functionality that I find fascinating that I kind of forgot before digging into the story a little bit more was the positioning of the Wii U as a kind of entertainment hub for the whole family. Because if you recall, it also had a button to control your TV. So you could use it as a remote well before other consoles allowed you to have similar functionalities. It had built-in streaming. Like, you could have a Hulu app or a Netflix app. Like, you could watch videos on your tablet. Yeah. And there were even trailers that showed people using cooking games that had recipes, so you could have it propped up on your counter as you chop vegetables. I saw a video of Martha Stewart like chopping carrots or something. Like, we have that concept has gone to other territories, like the home devices that Google and Amazon have in the form of like Echo Show, for example, fulfill that purpose. Phones have gotten better at it as well, but like the idea of having a sort of entertainment thing on the go for you to, you know, use for your convenience, like doing recipes, is kind of has been taken over by other things. But it's not like any of those ideas individually were bad. Like, we have found those solutions elsewhere, right? It's just not a single unit that was in the Wii U. So
it's kind of funny. That was like the dream of the Xbox One.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. To capture that like full suite of where you would go for entertainment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in retrospect,
I remember watching Netflix on that little screen, actually. That's funny that you mentioned that. I did that.
Probably not how Christopher Nolan wants to you to experience Oppenheimer.
Don't tell Chris.
Dude, I should buy a Wii U just to watch shitty movies on it and like review them.
Just to troll him and David Lynch that, you know, they hate everything except the theater.
Like, yeah, Wii U movie reviews. I think that's a good podcast right there.
Oh, my God.
But it's interesting because I don't think... Like, let's say, for example, you took someone that didn't really know what the Wii U was, and you described all of its functionality. You're like, you can play on the couch when someone else is using the TV. You can watch your favorite shows. You yeah. can download recipes. You can connect it to an exercise device, and it will remind right. you when you should be exercising. Like, I think it's actually, that sounds pretty good. Yes, I'd be interested yeah. in buying that. Great. It's called the Wii U, and it came out in like 2012.
It is kind of funny. Like, I almost wonder if this, if the Wii U is covered in like business schools as a branding failure.
Yeah.
You know, because it's, you know, I've heard people say that it was confusing. You know, some people thought that there was even like a Jimmy Fallon segment where he made a gaffe and he was saying like, oh, well, like I can buy this to hook up to my Wii, right? Like it seemed like a peripheral to the Wii, and it clearly, it obviously wasn't, but like the way that they named it and positioned it was not different enough from the last thing.
Yeah. Where do you think the Dreamcast fits into this conversation? Because, I mean, that always felt to me like a similar system that, you know, like, it's not like the Wii U was the first to have this problem, right? Where it didn't meet expectations, but
right.
when we look back on it in retrospect, there was something important there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's... Because what, the Dreamcast was 98 or 99? Oh, well, in America, I remember it was 9999. but I think it probably came out earlier in Japan. But like, I feel like it was definitely shorter. I remember the Dreamcast was discontinued after like 3 years or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think there's similar things where like, if I think back to the Dreamcast, there were things like...
It had another screen on it in the controller.
Exactly. It had that, God, what was it called? The VMU, right? Is yeah. that what they called yeah. it? And it was even more like that was totally a relic of its time where it wasn't even a true like second screen as parody. It was like second screen as an additional unit of the device. Like it was riding on the hot Tamagotchi wave of yes, you know the yeah. 90s. But yeah, it had the second screen. It had I believe the Dreamcast was one of the first that actually had internet connectivity on the console.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember.
Cuz couldn't you play like Phantasy Star?
Yeah, I was going to say yeah, exactly. Phantasy Star was the other like really old school MMO.
EverQuest maybe?
Maybe it was EverQuest. Yeah, maybe it was
there was an EverQuest. I know there's Phantasy Star for sure.
Yeah.
But again, like the Dreamcast, like kind of, we didn't talk about the games on the Wii U yet, but like some of those Dreamcast games, like Crazy Taxi,
Seaman,
or Jet Set Radio, or Shenmue, which is not a good game, but like a seemingly influential game. Like I don't know if the Yakuza games get that popular if Shenmue doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Or like Phantasy Star. Like I don't know if we. I don't know how the MMO space evolves on the console if Phantasy Star hadn't been as big as it was for that segment of people.
Yeah.
And I think the Wii U is kind of similar, where if you look at the top selling games of the Wii U, some of them are all time greats. I mean, Mario Kart 8 is one of the best selling games of all time. Super Mario 3D World, Super Mario Brothers U. It launched Splatoon, which has been extremely successful.
Yeah.
Super Mario Maker, which is like incredibly innovative. And honestly, I would say Super Mario Maker is probably the best game on the Wii U, I would say.
I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that. Well, it's also multiple games, so it's a bit cheating, but yes.
But it does what you were saying, which is it actually realizes the potential of the second screen.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, a lot of Nintendo games did, right? Like, Nintendo Land, which was I think it came with the system in most cases, offered a bunch of different like similar movement things. Or Pikmin 3, where the mini map is on the screen. I think it was used in a few other games. Like, I still miss that. That is such a cool, it's such a great functionality for a game where you want to use that screen real estate anyway. You don't have to pause to look at the fucking screen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's borne out because so many of these games, it's clear that the games were not the problem because they basically ported a bunch of these games, if not all of them, to the Switch, and they're like extremely successful on the Switch.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so it, there was something about the weird in-between space of the Wii U that just didn't give them a shot.
Do you recall what we thought about it when it first came out? Like, you and I owned one.
I feel like we were very much in a bubble, right? Because like we are video gaming enthusiasts, which means that if there's a new console coming out, we're probably going to buy it, and then it just becomes yeah. part of our collection. Yep. And so it just becomes normal to us to have a Wii U. But like statistically, it's clearly not normal to have a Wii U.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point.
But we played so many games. I remember playing all of these games. I probably have them somewhere in my garage, you know?
Yeah. Shovel Knight, I played on there. Zombie U.
Oh, my God. That was still back when they were doing the, like...
They added the U to the end.
Yeah,
titles.
They put the U on everything. I mean, like, they put the Nintendo 64.
There's a branding mistake for you. But, I mean, you could see why, right? Like, if they're struggling to make it distinct that this is a new thing...
Yeah.
You gotta make it clear.
As such.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they did that with New Super Mario Bros. U. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they did that with any of the Mario games. Did like Super Mario 3D World? It wasn't Super Mario 3D World U or something like that, right?
No, but it was part of the, because the Super Mario 3D was first a Nintendo 3DS game.
Yeah.
So they had to like they were kind of riding on the branding of that just as a franchise versus a console tie-in.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's like, yeah, I like looking at all of these, like, I think these games are actually quite good. I think about Breath of the Wild on the Wii U quite a bit, mm-hmm. because I played a good chunk of Breath of the Wild on the Wii U because I got it before I got a Switch. And I remember thinking to myself that this game was clearly built for the Wii U, but then they basically redesigned it
yeah.
for the Switch because, I mean, like, the map, all of that shit,
the Sheikah Slate,
perfect. Yes,
the Sheikah Slate is the Wii U tablet.
Yeah, totally. Like, they designed it as such. Like, it looks exactly
the camera
like that,
functionality in it. Yep,
all of that, like the gyroscope, all of that stuff. But like, it's just, in a way, it's just kind of tragic because you don't have the map on the second screen in that game. And clearly you were meant to,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, imagine if you could like draw a route on the map or put stars or mark things or whatever like that. Clearly that's how that game was supposed to go. But then they saw, they were like, oh, like we can't just section off this Zelda game in this console. That's not selling enough. We yeah. have to make sure that it's on the Switch. And then therefore we can't design around a second screen anymore. So we just have to kind of rip all that stuff out, like, for consistency's sake.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me too, like, from a business perspective, where does that point of no return come? Because it comes a lot sooner than consumers are aware, right? Like, yeah. X number of years into the Wii U cycle, they go, holy shit, like, this thing is absolutely bombing.
Yeah.
If we can't get a critical percentage of developers to take this console seriously and use the tablet to its greatest effect, then we increasingly lose justification for this console's existence, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
There is a world that you could imagine where it was easier for developers to start producing games for it, and they just did it, and then it blew up, you know what I mean? Like, there would be more games that leaned into that, and maybe that was like what a different world looks like. But I, you know, part of me also just wonders how much of this is just things that are too new for their time,
right,
are therefore too challenging to design for. And then you have a critical lack of games to sell, and it becomes a cycle where one doesn't justify the other, which doesn't justify the other, which has this, so on and so forth, right?
Yeah, it's like negative flywheel.
Yeah, like, we saw it with Dreamcast to some extent. We saw it with the Xbox. What did they call the thing on in front of your TV? The camera?
The Kinect.
Yeah, the Kinect, right?
Oh, like, man. Yeah.
Again, functionality that in some way, shape, and form is actually kind of cool, right? That that has not been replicated. Like, we don't have a TV that's watching how you move and adapting accordingly, right? Like,
yep.
So, yeah, it's interesting because if there isn't this critical consent, if there is this critical acceptance of that new technology, then you see a lot of really great innovation. And I think you see that now with handheld games, right? Like the push for that from the Switch to the Steam Deck, and, you know, rumors that Xbox is going to make one in the coming year as well. But yeah, you just won't be able to fully explore those other ones outside of the strange little like niche indie things, you know?
There, I think you're right about there's a heavy time and place aspect to the Wii U, where it did introduce a lot of new stuff a little bit earlier than kind of the trends were going. Like all of the trends seem to be on point, but just a little bit early. And I think crucially, there was like a technological problem in that Nintendo as a business likes to make money off of its hardware much earlier than, well, I don't know actually how the next consoles are going to go, but historically speaking, like it seems like the manufacturers kind of lose money or break even on the early runs of consoles, and then they eventually get more profitable and then they make more money off the games and such. But Nintendo has generally gone to the market with lower powered consoles, technology that is cheaper to mass produce and you know, not as expensive. And I think the tablet itself suffered for that, you know, like the range on it was bad. The battery life was not good. The screen was terrible. I mean, like it wasn't a, what do they call that technology where it's not, maybe it's resistive touch screen where you have to, you actually have to kind of like mash it down a little bit more. Like it's not like a phone screen. It wasn't like a capacitive LCD.
You which know? Calls like it, you, which you causes had, you to like fat finger it. So like the degree of control was very limited. Yeah.
The stylus was actually very critical to using it properly because you needed the kind of hard plastic point to have a more precise tap.
Yep.
But I got to imagine that they did that to make it more economical. And also, again, in the year 2012, like it's different. Like LCD screens have only gotten more and more economical as the years have gone by. And so now you can probably mass produce something that looks a lot more like you can mass produce something that looks like the Steam Deck, or a million smartphones, probably much cheaper than you could back then, you know, 12 years ago. And so like you have this weird thing of like, all of these ideas are pretty good, but there's so many like new ones, and it's out of step with what the other big players are doing, and Nintendo is not willing to like break the bank on like making a technological leap, and so here we are, you know, we're in this weird middle ground of it.
Yeah, I would just love to be a fly on the wall in those conversations, going from Wii U launch to catastrophic failure to like Switch design to success. Right. Like it's such a wild story how that whole thing progressed.
We have not talked about the Miiverse.
Yes. Okay. I'm glad you mentioned it, because I was going to say, like, I don't think we could do the Wii U justice and not touch on this. I think there was something really special about the tablet being kind of like a social media tool.
Yes.
Now, in this day and age, I want less social media, not more.
Right.
But at the time, it felt really fresh and uniquely like community positive to have this space where you could connect with other players, like the whole Miiverse set up for you could find forums or help or guidance on things. I loved the way that people would draw using the tablet. I mean, the Splatoon art alone of people using the tablet to make really great designs and sharing and posting those was cool.
Yep.
There were devs like Sakurai, while working on Smash Brothers, would share like behind the scenes stuff and like memes and things. It felt like a Nintendo social network.
Yep.
I don't think it should have survived. Like, I think it's a bad idea in the long run, you know, and it didn't work. And of all the companies to run a social media platform, Nintendo is possibly one of the worst to try to handle something like that. But like, there's a purity to the vision and a kind of untapped potential that reminds me almost of the like heyday of AIM chat message rooms and stuff. Right? Yes. Like it is something that existed for a very brief moment and was an interesting sort of cultural and community sort of test or experiment that no longer exists today and won't be recreated anytime in the future. But feels like something was special about it, right?
Right. Right. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's been a long time. This is an EXP podcast bingo opportunity here. But Ian Bogost wrote something a while back.
Mr. McRib himself.
Yeah. When the Walls Fell. he wrote something about the changing. This was years ago, by the way. Like he wrote about the changing nature of social media and how it's now more about, it's less about social networking, which is what it kind of started off as. And now it is social media, as in I'm broadcasting myself as a brand. And I think the Wii U Miiverse was one of the kind of remnants of the actual social network, because it was topic based. It was like the channels were like, you had a Miiverse and you had different like areas for different games or like different kind of topics. And, you know, it was kind of community based and it was message based. So you had to leave messages or draw pictures or whatever. Like no one was posting like, oh, here's my pictures with like, you know, brunch with the gals or whatever. Yeah, like no one was doing the like personal fake highlight reel shit because it just wasn't technically feasible. And it was all topic based because it was about video games and it was about like the community around video games. And so like it was something that was truly unique in the game space because it was so specific to games and it was so limited to actual messages and drawings. And like, there's something super unique about that I actually kind of miss at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I recall functionality issues with it.
Oh, yeah.
Like the way that you would find content and sort content was like all over the place and load times were rubbish. But you're right. I think we're being a little bit biased, like from a nostalgia perspective, or almost more like, I think at least myself, I admittedly wear rose colored glasses because it represents a social media platform that did not devolve because it was so short-lived into social media today, which is just a fucking nightmare, right? Like Twitter and X and Elon Musk, all that stuff. Like it's just, it is a purer form. Like there were fewer, a lot fewer white nationalists, I think, were platformed on the Miiverse. Now I will say not none of them. I'm sure they were there.
Right,
but it felt like a safer space. So I think when I think back to it, it feels more pure and childlike, probably than it actually was.
But again, I don't think you're wrong though, because like one, it was Nintendo, and so they're just stricter on what is what they'll allow on their platforms.
Yeah,
and then two.
But I remember some like very scantily drawn Wii U tablet waifus in the day.
Oh, I mean, yeah, everyone will test the limits of, you know, whatever moderation is happening in a online community 100%. But, you know, I don't remember seeing a lot of like anti-vax rhetoric on the fucking Miiverse, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But then I think it goes back to a game design thing of like, what are the verbs? Like, what are the affordances that they gave you in the Miiverse? And it was just much more directed. It was much more limited where it's like you are here to interact about certain games or certain events around games, you know, like all the Splatoon stuff that they would do.
Yeah.
And your affordances are super short messages that have to fit into the speech bubble of a me character or the tablet that you can sketch things on. And so like, it's just, I don't know. There's something about the limits of a platform that actually could make it more unique than just like you could put any old shit on Facebook, you know, like there's just there's no limit there, and so there's no filter on it.
Yeah, and you could directly post screenshots too, like you while you're mid game you could post a screenshot that's like, hey, I need help with something, can you help me find it. Yeah,
I remember I believe the Smash Brothers on Wii U had a thing where it would like port in drawings from people from the Miiverse in the background while you're on the stages.
Oh my gosh, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, and
which is just like a little pleasant thing, you know, like it's like a charming thing about like the community.
And you'd get like memes and stuff all the time. Like someone would draw like Captain Falcon punching Ness in the face or something.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, like, God, now I feel like I'm really missing it so hard because that world will never come back, right? Like, I just cannot imagine that kind of integration, like letting people who have drawn things, a genuine artist, like pop shit up mid game or in like a social media network tied to the game. Like we have Discord and fan art and like, yes, there's a lot of expressions of this, but it wasn't so centered, you know, it didn't feel like the town center in the way that in a very weird way, the Miiverse did around certain titles.
Yeah. Agreed. And I don't, and again, it's, I think a lot of this boils down to a time and place thing. Like it just so happened to be kind of at the apex of pre-enchidification of social media accidentally. they made something that in a very Nintendo-like way that just so happened to take advantage of the good parts of a social network before it became fully social media, in that distinction. And integrated in their games in kind of a playful way. Like the Splatfests and Splatoon were always really funny in the Miiverse because people 100%. Would get so hyped up around like ketchup versus mayonnaise or whatever, and just like get really into it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it's so interesting too, because like the platform wasn't built to deliver things in an algorithmic way that benefited the platform and its ad sponsors, right? Like things that were funny and great funny and great, and that was it. Like it was okay to be just that in that space.
Yeah, because they weren't looking. I mean, it was Nintendo, so they have a strange approach to anything online. But you're right, like they weren't looking to fully like, oh yeah, we're gonna do like a co-branded deal with, you know, Heinz ketchup on this ketchup versus mustard thing. And it's like, no, they were just kind of doing it for like a community event, you know?
And you know, maybe this was the case, maybe it wasn't, but I don't recall the ability to say follow creators on that space, right? Like it wasn't so brand driven. It was, you know, what is going to resonate with players? Like you don't get anything out of it, you know?
Yeah.
There's no way to monetize it. It's truly like community.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's truly community driven, which is so funny coming from a company that has so consistently shat on community-driven projects.
Right. It's like, unless you're drawing weird pictures on our proprietary social network, we're going to sue you out of existence.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a... And I guess like with the servers being done for the Wii U, like that functionality is truly, well and truly gone on the Wii U.
Yeah. Because they didn't bring... Very little of that stuff was brought forward. Really, and very little of that stuff was even emulated, I feel like, in other systems, even non-Nintendo platforms.
Yeah.
What was your favorite Wii U game before we leave?
Oh, favorite Wii U game.
It's kind of weird because so many of these have been ported, you know?
Probably Super Smash Brothers. I mean, if I had to be honestly like the game that I played the most.
A ton of that.
I mean, admittedly, it was not the... In fact, it probably was the worst Super Smash Brothers, but...
I think Brawl would like a word.
Oh, yes, you're right. Excuse me. I forgot about Brawl. I forgot about Brawl. I played a lot of Super Smash Brothers on the Wii U, so probably that one. Yeah. In terms of, like, other exclusives, I mean, Super Mario Maker for sure.
Yeah.
And the great thing about Super Mario Maker is... And I loved the tablet usage, like being able to use the little tablet to move things around. I know the functionality exists on the Switch, and I didn't dive as deeply into it, but Super Mario Maker. Yeah, Super Mario Maker. Maybe Pikmin 3, too. That one was really good. I really enjoyed Pikmin.
That one was good. Yeah, I got to go Mario Maker. Because even we're pretty big Mario Maker fans to this day, but like it's just not the right form factor with the Switch. It's you can just make a level so much faster when you have... like a tablet acting as a canvas and your screen. And that's just not possible with Mario Maker 2. So
and it felt so fluid to go from building to playing in a way that even with the Switch, there's a sort of transitionary moment. I also wonder if there is like a sort of community cultural moment that, you know, the let's build this together mentality that the Wii U and the Miiverse was creating was conducive towards Super Mario Maker feeling like a really beautiful community driven moment that kind of lost that edge when it launched on the Switch with the second one.
Well, I mean, pour one out for the Wii U, like a kind of a beautiful failure, like a weird footnote in Nintendo history, but like disproportionately influential, perhaps.
I saw one comment in a video I was sort of freshening up on that mentioned Nintendo is innovative when they're struggling. And I thought that was a really interesting idea that like they were, I mean, I guess the Wii sold really well, so maybe they weren't struggling that much going into the Wii U, but like there's something about leaning into those design ideas. And I am now curious, when the Switch 2 gets announced, like, is it going to feel like Nintendo is continuing to push boundaries, or because of the Switch's success, is it going to feel extremely iterative and safe?
That is a good point. I mean, like, you're right. They were coming off of like massive success from the Wii, but like they were still having to make the jump into making HD games and having a truly online console. And like they were trying to figure shit out. And I think it did. There was a certain level of like desperation there where it's like, is this how to do it?
Yeah.
And like they kind of learned some things, and then the Switch came out, and now it's like, oh, what's the next step after that?
I mean, never count them out. The Wii U
2, I'm calling it right now.
Yeah. I mean, never count them out, you know, like as we often say about Nintendo, but definitely curious to see how that goes.
Well, the Wii U lives on in my household because that's how we played the Zelda Wind Waker HD collection. And again, an amazing use of the tablet on that game.
I'm jealous. I think one day, because I want my kids to play these games, and maybe this is just a pie in the sky dreams that my kids will both want to play video games and be okay busting out an old thing like the Wii U, but I'd love to revisit that one day.
Yeah. Well, we will... We may in fact revisit that one day, because I think it's like the definitive version of a game like that. And so there'll always be like a nice collector's place for that sort of stuff.
For sure.
All right. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. You could probably visit it using the Wii U's internet browser. So feel free to come on down, leave us a review by tapping on your Wii U tablet.
It'll load for 5 minutes, but don't worry.
it'll pop up.
If only they could still send us reviews and messages on the Miiverse.
I'm going to Google best Miiverse, like memes now. And spend all night looking at that.
All right, everyone. As always, we thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Ciao.